In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Welcome. So glad you're joining us today. We have a very loaded show for you, so we're going to dive right in. But first, I want to remind you of a couple things. One is the strategy that we've talked about previously when it comes to congressional districts, that if you live in a safe district, that's CD2 in Oregon, or one where the Republican has no chance, that's CD1 and 3, help the candidates where there is a chance, and that's CD4, 5, and 6. Today, we'll have guests from 5 and 6, Angela Plowhead in the newly created CD6, and John DePaola in CD5. Second, remember that in a primary, and this is especially so in statewide races like Senate and governor, you have to make an intelligent, reasoned choice. You need to vote for who is going to not only appeal to your side, but who could bring voters over from the other side and from the unaffiliated. Voting in the primary is different than the general election. In the primary, you are voting for which team you want on the field in November, our best against their best. You want to pick someone who can win in November because they are the best qualified on most issues that most people are concerned about. And that includes people on the other side because you want to draw them over. That said, let's get to it. I'd like to welcome Dr. Angela Plowhead back to the show. She is a former signals intelligence analyst with the Air Force. Dr. Plowhead is now a clinical psychologist based in Salem. And as I said, she is running for the Republican nomination for U.S. Congress in the newly created CD6. Angela, it's welcome back. It's great to talk to you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, so I had wanted to pick up a couple of points from the last time we had talked. And if people missed that interview, we will put a link up to that on today's show page. One was that you had mentioned that there is a psychological warfare being waged against the American public right now. And I absolutely believe that. The CIA has developed the tools that for psychological warfare in other countries. And now it's being used here. And you can just look at things like the Russia collusion hoax that intelligence agencies push on the American people using the media and so much more. But psychological warfare takes planning and coordination. Someone is doing it. So first, why do you think that what we're seeing is psychological warfare instead of the normal politicking? And second, who or what agencies is doing the planning and execution?
So, you know, I think there's a couple of things. So I think exactly what you talked about with what happened with, you know, everything with the Russian dossier, which was one piece of it, which really turned our nation to a nation that was divided, a nation that was against one another. So we had, you know, but prior to that, we've never had that level of dissension around an election.
Yeah.
And whether or not a president was actually their president. And so, you know, that's when we first started seeing the not my president kind of thing, right?
Right.
So since that time, you know, there has been so much discord sown between the American people. And when you have people that are against one another, you know, it's much easier to conquer a nation. And what we're seeing is our own nation, our own leaders kind of colluding against us to break down the fabrics of our society so that way they can institute what they see as a more perfect world order. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've heard about this, you know, Great Reset and other types of things where we need to be more globalist and we need to be more concerned with the standing of the world versus the standing of America. What I've also seen, though, is where we have had three generals that were writing letters to the editor, which when does that ever happen when you have sitting generals writing letters to the editor? To talk about how the American people needed to be ready, essentially, for the military to step in and take action at our next election.
It's crazy. How do everyday people fight back against this kind of psychological warfare?
So I think first is recognizing that it's happening, not taking everything at face value, but looking at things with a critical eye and wondering what's the motive behind it. You know, why would we have sitting generals do that? There's no reason for it unless they're planning to do something.
Yeah.
We've not had a time in our history, in modern history anyway, where we've had to utilize our military against American people. You know, we haven't had, you know, these types of insurrections or things like that where the military has had to be utilized, except for during the riots, right? Where we had our president say, you know, let's bring in the National Guard and let's take care of this, because on the local level, they weren't doing it. They didn't stop it when it started.
Yeah.
And so it was allowed to grow and flourish and kind of take on a life of its own, where there needed to be some other kind of action taken. And it still took months for it to kind of peter out a bit.
Yeah, and how crazy was that when cities are literally burning and he wanted to bring in the National Guard and people said, oh, no, we can't do that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I'm running, because, you know, I was watching our nation burn, and not just Portland, but other cities throughout our nation that were literally on fire. And we had our elected leaders say, you know, no, they're just expressing themselves. It's a peaceful protest, you know, not holding anyone accountable, and then giving, if they did get arrested, giving them money when they got out. And so there has to be some common sense used in politics. And right now we've seen a decided lack of it in many, many areas.
Yeah, absolutely. There are just so many examples of psychological warfare, so many slices of that pie. You've got the intelligence agencies waging war on the American people, entrapment, false flags, the involvement of the media propaganda, big tech interfering with free speech in favor of their own politics. If you were elected, what would you do and where would you start? What are some of your solutions on these issues?
Well, I think some of it has to do with getting people that are on our intelligence committees in Senate and the Congress that are essentially enemies of the state. I mean, these are people that don't love America. They don't even like America. You know, they're card-carrying communists. And so the ideas of America that this country is built on are ideas that they are opposed to. Why those people are sitting on our intelligence committees are ludicrous. They should have nothing to do with it. So we need to get those people off of those committees. We also need to make sure that we're holding our intelligence community accountable. And when there's failures, then and they need to be accountable to people that actually have an understanding of what the intelligence community is and should be doing. And so, you know, having people on those committees that have that kind of background or have that understanding is imperative.
Yes.
And that's where it starts.
Yeah.
But also, you know, holding every single department in our government accountable for the actions they're taking, you know, from the top to the bottom.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely. It really should be illegal for our own intelligence agencies to use these tools of deception against the American people. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Dr. Angela Plowhead. She is running for the Republican nomination in Oregon's CD6. Stay with us. Dr. Angela Plowhead is running for the Republican nomination in U.S. Congress in the newly created CD6. That's the western side of Marion and Linn County, including Salem and Kaiser, and heading west into Polk and Yamhill and a narrow little corridor up through Washington County into the outskirts of Portland. And we had previously interviewed her back on the first weekend of April, and we'll link that interview on today's show page on iSpyRadio.com so you can listen to that. And Angela, another point from last time that we had touched on but just ran out of time to explore more was that we had begun talking about the transgender and sexuality being pushed on kids as young as kindergarten, and also some licensing issues. And doing the research for that show, I'd come across a really fascinating thread on Reddit discussing a tweet by a biological man claiming he was experiencing menstrual pain. And 50,000 people had liked that tweet. And when people pointed out the biology of not having a uterus, so he couldn't be experiencing menstrual pain, they were attacked for pointing out reality. But what was really fascinating was that there were some psychologists had weighed in on that Reddit thread and gave their experiences. They said that the APA considers any therapy that is not affirmative therapy to be quote unquote conversion therapy, and they could actually lose their license if they tried it. And so they are essentially forced to entertain a patient's delusions for fear of being canceled by their own profession. So are they correct on that, that psychologists could lose their license over something like this?
So there's a few things regarding psychologists. So you can be a part of APA, and APA is essentially an organization. You do not have to be a part of APA. If you belong to APA, then you have to agree to any doctrinal statement that they have made, which is why I've chosen not to be a part of APA. There are a number of really, I think, questionable things that they have come down on, and they almost always come down on a really progressive side without looking at all of the evidence. So when we're talking about the transgender policies, you know, a lot of the transgender research that's out there is qualitative, which means that it is research that has come about by asking someone questions. So there's no blind studies, there's no hard science. So these are poor quality studies. And then they develop this entire almost theology around it. So a lot of these policies that are coming out in schools are based on a lot of this type of research. And so I was looking at one meta-analysis, which means that they looked at a bunch of different studies. And in this, there were 21 studies that were qualitative, and only two that were quantitative, so looking at hard numbers. And so, you know, it's that kind of thing that I think is going to get us in trouble. So, you know, a lot of these policies, they're applying them to an entire general population, regardless of whether or not someone is gender conforming or gender non-conforming. So when we have one person in a school, because we know that gender dysphoria only affects a very small percentage of people, about 0.005%. So by the time, and by the time children that have gender dysphoria reach adulthood, only about 6 to 23% of them still have gender dysphoria into adulthood. So 75% or more do not have gender dysphoria as an adult. Wow. If they've had it as a child.
Wow.
But yet we're pushing all of this, you know, these policies around transitioning kids, and the people that are heading this up are schools. So if you have a school which has no person in it that has been trained, that has a specialty in gender dysphoria, that has a specialty where they are able to diagnose and then treat mental health disorders, not only diagnosing, but then creating a transition plan, which could very well include surgical interventions, hormone interventions, which can be life-altering and unreversible. And then you have them engaging in policies that are practices that are deceptive to the parents.
Right.
So like this one just came out in Salem Kaiser that says that if the child says that they are transgender but they don't want their parents to know, then the school must act in deceptive practices to keep the parents from knowing.
And that is just absolutely insane on so many levels. So we see this kinds of impacts by licensing and credentialing organizations and other professions, such as where doctors were not allowed to disagree with the official narratives. In fact, a medical doctor here in the Willamette Valley lost his license because he refused to force patients or clinical workers to wear masks. In education, you've got universities that if they don't include some kind of critical race theory curriculum, they're actually in danger of losing their accreditation. So speaking as a practitioner from inside the profession, is it time to start reassessing the control these kinds of organizations have over professions? For example, should there be competition by expanding things like licensing and accreditation to multiple associations so there's more than just one?
I absolutely think that that would be certainly a good method of managing the situation. So, you know, right now the licensing bodies are there to protect the public. They're not there necessarily to protect the psychologist or ensure that the psychologist is, well, really they're there to make sure that the psychologist is engaging in clinical practices that are appropriate for the protection of the public. But when you're applying, like I was talking about, this kind of junk science to all of this, and to a psychologist or any other person, then are you really doing the public a service?
Right.
So I think, I'm not sure if I mentioned before, that there's not been any study looking at the harms or potential harms that could happen when you apply this type of education or teaching to a general population. And so before we're saying things like, hey, you can't do that, we need to make sure that all the research is there.
Hmm. So real quick, what is something about your campaign that most people may not know but really ought to?
Wow. I've been out so much and I've done so many interviews. I think people probably should know most things about me at this point. I really am a fighter. I am someone who, I don't just say I'm going to do something. I actually do it. And so, you know, people have seen me all over the place, and they've seen me all over the media and all over social media and all over just our district, because I am a fighter, because I believe that when you say you're going to do something, you have to do it. And you need to get out there and actually fight for the things you say you're standing for.
That's awesome.
And I see too many people running for these political positions that aren't out there talking. Yep. They're just out there talking.
Yep. And we definitely we definitely need more fighters in there. For more information, her website is angelafororegon.com. Angela, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on again.
I'd like to welcome Mark Thielman back to the show. He recently stepped down as the superintendent of the Alsea School District to focus full-time on his campaign for governor as a Republican. The Alsea School District was the only district in Oregon that stayed open during the COVID and refused to force things like masks and vaccines on staff or students, despite fierce and often personal attacks on Mark and the school by the governor, the health authority, and the education department. Mark and the school board not only stood up to the governor, but doing so led to a 500% increase in enrollment. Absolutely fantastic. Mark, it is great to talk to you again.
Well, thanks for having me back. I really do appreciate it.
Absolutely. So because you stopped mandating masks, there have been some lawsuits that have ensued, but they went after you for basically being a bully to staff and even included charges of sexual harassment. One was the husband of an elementary teacher who sent a complaint letter to the school board. So can you address this?
Well, you know, this is what I call classic woke attack. So one was a former employee, the other is a current employee, and I worked with these two for 8-9 years. And, you know, the devil is always in the details. But what really caused the consternation was when I took a stand on masking and upheld parents' rights to decide whether their child should be masked or not. As you know, I think we covered that because the research was clear that masking was harmful to children. And the younger the child, the more harmful or the more harm and damage they were doing to their education and their health, et cetera. And so the thing is, they're progressive minded people, and they did what progressives do. They checked back, and pretty soon, you know, the OEA was upset, the teachers union. They were calling into Alsea, into the community. They were scouring Facebooks, trying to find allies. And that's what progressives do when they see a threat. They target the whole person, their family, their reputation.
Yep.
I even got a call, some very threatening conversations, you know, that came in from, you know, some of the teachers union folks and other people of that mind. And, you know, and I don't want to get into the details, but just to summarize for people, basically it was this: we're going to sue you personally. We're going to recall your school board. We're going to destroy your reputation. We're going to make sure you never work again, or you can put kids back in masks. So there's the wow. Summation of the kinds of attacks I received. And in each and every time, including to certain attorney, one attorney from the teachers union, for example, I was very direct. Okay, well, I'm sorry, I don't work for you. And if you're going to do all that, that's fine. But I, Mark Thielman, am not going to put kids back in masks. One, because I didn't have the authority, only the school board did. And when we went into the next school board meeting, by the way, the one board member made a motion to rescind masking, and it died for lack of second.
Wow.
And then I stood in the way and protected the school board from the woke mob that had showed up, people who hadn't attended board meetings, but they all had their masks on, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm getting at is, this is called leadership. And if you don't want to stand in the fire, then don't lead.
That's right.
And I led. So the thing is, you know, if you look into the lawsuits, for example, if you notice, I'm not named as a defendant. And the other one isn't a lawsuit. It's a tort claim notice. A tort claim notice says, Well, I might sue you. I reserve the right to sue you, but that doesn't mean I'm going to sue you. And the reason that person did a tort claim is they already had a separation agreement in which they had signed a full release of claims, to, not just to myself, but to every other person that they might have had agreements with. Mm-hmm. And so what you do is, if you look, the same attorney represents both these people, and the two of them are lifelong friends. Does that sound like woke gang behavior?
Yeah, just,
I think it does.
Just a little bit. Well, you know, it just comes across so much as if they can't beat you, they'll sue you. And it's really, they're really trying to get these headlines and, oh my gosh, Mark Thielman is this horrible person. And look at this, he's being sued by people. Well, we have seen that with other political candidates as well. There was a new study that states with the least restrictive lockdowns fare the best. And this is a confirmational study backing up other such findings that pretty much the most heavy-handed states got it all wrong. So looking back, do you think Oregon got anything right during the pandemic?
Well, as I said in my little Coin6 live debate today, the government did nothing but get everything wrong consistently. Hmm. Okay, so they were wrong on metrics. They were wrong on the efficacy of masks. They were wrong on the accuracy of PCR tests. They were wrong on their lockdown draconian policy. They were wrong on shutting down small business. I can go on. The bottom line is they were wrong on everything. And the comedy of it is now that real data is coming out. This is what I want to impress on people. Listen, I always believe that the truth will set you free, which is why I can handle scrutiny. I'm okay to take the hits because I know in the long run I'm going to be exonerated, and I will. But the downside of the truth is it's not always timely. So here we are almost 2 years after the pandemic, and the truth is coming out.
Yes, it is.
Verifying. Yeah, there's a report out, as you know, that verifies that they were manipulating statistics and data for political purposes.
Right.
Very exonerated right now.
Yeah, this is a report from the GAO. They just issued a report that the CDC, the FDA, and NIH, and there's another agency, they all altered or suppressed data and scientific findings about COVID for political reasons. So there you go. And, you know, speaking of that, in the general election, you're going to have to overcome some of these unskeptical believers, people who should have been skeptical but weren't. And they dutifully believed and did everything the state said and who actually became the enforcers as well, telling others to obey. So this is kind of a psychological dilemma for people. They need to believe that the state took the right action, because if they don't believe that, they'd have to examine their own actions. And as I said, we now know that they were lied to. So it's kind of an abusive situation. What would you do if elected a governor to heal those wounds and bring people together and back to reality?
Well, it's real simple. You tell people the truth, and then you explain the why behind the truth. This is why the truth is important. Here's why I'm taking a position that the opposition says is counterintuitive or not real. And here's the outcomes that you will see in time, in real life, by pursuing the truth that I am relaying. And that's what I did. I was in real time, Mark, you know that, real time during the pandemic, telling people and the media that the government had it wrong,
yep,
that they were not telling the truth. And I feel pretty vindicated right now. And this is why I'm qualified to lead this state as the next governor.
Okay, let's actually take a break. We got lots more to talk with Mark Thielman. He is the former superintendent of the LC School District running for governor of Oregon. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking now with Mark Thielman. He's a candidate for the governor of Oregon. He recently stepped down as superintendent of the LC School District, where they saw a 500% increase and enrollment under his leadership as he stood up to Governor Kate and her many mandates. Mark, as a superintendent of all the candidates, you clearly have the most direct experience with education. And I truly think that education is certainly one of the biggest issues this election, in part because I think when it comes to the general election, everyone on both sides of the aisle and independents, we all want good education for our kids. So what are some of the first steps that you would do to improve education in this state?
Well, the first thing on day one, obviously, if there's any mandates, we repeal those. So like any vaccine requirement for a mom to go on a field trip with their, you know, her child, that's been a real issue right now. A lot of crying moms. I had one last night. The Salem School District, Salem Kaiser School District is one of the great offenders. And, you know, Dr. Fauci just said we are out of the pandemic phase. So what's with the not letting moms create memories with their children on a field trip?
Yeah.
See? And this just shows you the incompetence and the culture problem we have in our schools. So the first thing you do is you take a firm stand on that. No divisive ideologies, no CRT, CSE, comprehensive sex ed. We're not going to teach kindergartners that they can change genders. All that gets done immediately because people need to see the governor, who's also the superintendent of public instruction, by the way, leading. And then we're going to implement a different kind of culture and business model, including some retraining for activist teachers. So we will not have activism in the classroom. And we have to have academic excellence in education. We have to teach kids how to think, not what to think, or groom them to think. And what's really important is the only way you can do that is you put the parent in charge. Parents are the customers. They're the ones we're serving. The product that the public schools generate is the quality education that kids receive. It's something parents can see in their child as they come home, learning, knowing, growing. And right now we have a lot of a huge lack of confidence or a crisis of confidence in that because of the activism and the division. And there are things that all parents agree on. I will share this with your audience. Every parent, regardless of whether you're progressive or mega conservative, that's the two extremes, right? Every parent that I've ever met wants their kid to be able to read, write, do math, understand science, reason and think critically, and be capable and confident, have good character development, and have resiliency when bad things happen. I've never met a single parent that didn't want that for their kid. That's going to be focus moving forward. It'll unify our parents. It'll restore confidence and get our schools back to academic excellence and standards.
So stepping into take the reins of the governor's office, you are going to have a lot, if not most, of the people there in state government opposed to you or any Republican, your goals and your politics. So stepping into the governor's office, how would you get people to work together to make your goals succeed? And maybe you could point to an example where you've overcome that kind of opposition.
Well, in the same way I was so effective as the only publicly declared conservative superintendent in the education world, results. So the first thing I do is I don't judge anybody, even progressives. I'm very clear that I don't care for the progressive woke ideology and the negative things that it creates and the division it creates. At the same time, I'm open-minded. So notice what I just said. All parents want their kids to be able to do these things. It's inarguable. So you want to do a couple of things. One is if somebody's going to be oppositional with me, I will drive them to the point of absurdity. And I just did it on the debate today with Mr. Pamplin media guy, Dana, I think his name was, when he asked a gotcha question. And when it became my turn to answer, I said, well, here goes the media again, asking me to identify a government program or department that is doing a good job. And then they don't define what a good job is or what the criteria is for me to measure that. See?
Yep.
And this is the thing. This is why it's so effective. So I'm going to do weekly press conferences where I get to talk to the people in Oregon and the media. And I get to have these very conversations. Here's what I'm now being told. I'm being told that, this particular initiative to open up federal forests and to create jobs in Oregon and to reduce fire damage or danger and to regulate our natural resources more environmentally and to create access for hunting and fishing and create more habitat and feed for elk and deer and other desirable species. I'm now being told that my desire to accomplish that, and that includes saving the spotted frog and the spotted owl, right? It is now some kind of capitalist, hate group or gang or game.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you get that out in the public and progressives don't know what to do. They don't do well in the open field of ideas. They do great in the world of control and compliance. And so as governor, it's why it's such a critical position. Think of the way that will impact positively in terms of moving the dial back to common sense and balance. When you have a governor every week going out and going at it and talking directly to the people of Oregon and holding the media accountable. And believe me, it'll be a little chippy, but over time people will get in the groove. And the reason is results will happen. And once results happen, everyone wants to be part of success, Mark. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's funny how that goes.
It is. I had progressive employees sharing glory with me as we grew to 1,000 students in LC by 500%.
Well, I'm certain that as a superintendent of school systems, I'm sure you have a lot of experience dealing with staff with very different views. We only got about a minute here with you. So you're known for education. That really is your big issue. But what is something else about your campaign that maybe most people don't know but really ought to know? Perhaps there's an issue that you're really strong on that doesn't quite get enough attention.
Well, we just won a series of shocking straw polls, and also that, you know, we polled very high in the 4-week-long taxpayer poll, and it's really surprising a lot of better funded campaigns. And so we just won the Dorchester straw poll by 61%, more than double the next person. And I vanquished every person I was up on stage with has technically better funded campaign than mine. But see, as I want everyone to know that there's two ways you can win an election. One is you just pay for it, right?
Right.
The other is hard work and influence. And so I've earned enough money to be competitive, but every dollar I have has been amplified by hard work and really good messaging and telling people the truth.
Well, there you go.
And that's the good stuff.
Yep. So for more information, Mark's website is markmarc4oregon.com. We'll link that up on iSpotRadio.com as well. Mark, thanks so much, and good luck going forward here.
Hey, well, thanks for everything. You guys are awesome as usual.
And welcome back. For perhaps a first time ever, we have a third guest on the One iSpy radio show. We're talking now with Dr. John DePaola. He is a recently retired orthopedic surgeon who is running for Congress in CD5. That's the eastern halves of Marion and Linn counties, portion of Clackamas, and all the way over to Bend. John, welcome back. It's good to talk to you again.
Thanks, Mark. It's great to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I should mention that John was also on a show previously, and we will link that show on today's show page for you to listen to. Just head to iSpyRadio.com and look for this week's show page. And so first things first, John, Mark Twain is often quoted as, "Rumors of my demise are greatly exaggerated," and you had a similar situation because there was a recent interruption in your campaign in which you paused it for a few days, and some people, including some candidates, leaped in and said that you'd quit the race. So can you explain to our audience what happened and the current status of your campaign?
Well, I just had to deal with a situation where I felt I needed to step away for a period of time to get things in order. And, you know, as a businessman, sometimes you're ready to push through on a project to completion and you realize everything's not in place, things aren't solid, and if you push forward without making sure that everything is firm and strong, you can end up falling flat on your face. So yeah. I stepped away. I am fine. I'm healthy. I'm strong. And I've been campaigning again, and I've been encouraged by many, many people that they want to see me in the race. And I'm going to keep going and keep pushing hard through the primary.
Good, good. And I think you're definitely needed because you do have a lot of experience. You were an orthopedic surgeon, as I said, and on that previous interview with you, you had talked to us about dealing with government overreach, including the absurdity of bureaucrats and politicians with no medical experience making patients put off surgeries and essentially telling them, well, just live with the pain. But you're a first-time yeah. politician. There was a recent poll, in fact, by OPB that we'll put up on iSpyRadio.com as well, that found that 47% of Oregonians preferred a candidate with no political experience to only 27% that wanted somebody with prior political experience. You seem to be the right candidate at the right time.
Well, I feel that I am, and I get a lot of good feedback from people. They ask me, you know, why are you running? And I'll say, well, I'm not a politician, and there's invariably a big sigh of relief and a smile, and they say, well, you're the one that we're hoping we can count on. And you know, one of the things about the COVID situation, and I've followed this from the beginning because as a physician, you know, these things perk up your interest. And I have to say that in the beginning, I did get a vaccination because I was practicing, and in order to continue treating patients, I had to get vaccinated, and I didn't know much about the vaccine. But now that I'm looking back, I know that it appears that the public health bureaucracy has been captured by political, governmental, and industrial interests, and they are no longer functioning in a purely scientific manner, and the veracity of their recommendations is in question because of so many contradictions and so many pieces of information and guidance put out without really sufficient evidence to support them.
Well, and I absolutely agree with that. There was a report out this week that we had mentioned in the last segment there with Mark Thielman, and I'd like to actually ask you about that in the next segment. But they were clearly putting politics over science. And can you also remind our audience, for those who didn't catch that previous interview, why you should be their pick for CD5 instead of Lori DeRemer or Jimmy Krumpacker? What makes you the better choice, in other words?
Well, I don't think of things in political terms. I think of things in terms of solutions to problems. And whenever someone who has a political mindset enters into a discussion of how to solve a problem, they'd have to give up that political mindset. And I just don't think my competitors can actually do that. So my experience over the last 30 plus years in dealing with very complicated issues, having to be able to explain to my patients what those issues are in a way that is understandable to them, despite the fact that they don't have any high-level knowledge of the area of my expertise, but to make them comfortable enough, make the information understandable enough so that they can come to a good quality decision about how we should move forward with their with a solution to their problem. And that's what I want to do for the voters in the 5th District. Right. I think Oregonians are intelligent, and they can make their own decisions if they have the right information.
Right, right. So help us see the future here. John DiPaolo wins the primary, and in November, Dr. DiPaolo beats the far-left candidate that the Democrats are working very hard to elect because the common-sense people of CD5 refuse to elect somebody who is the same type of politician who got us into all these problems to begin with. And there you are in Washington. So what are you going to focus on, especially first?
Well, first of all, there are national issues that everyone's familiar with that we need to resolve, and I think a large portion of the Republican congressional and senatorial candidates will be able to manage that. I'll be part of that effort. But specifically, I'm very interested in children, in the education system, and I'm also very interested in our agricultural and forestry infrastructure, and this would be the main focus of intensive study for me while I attend to the routine requirements of my position as a congressman.
Okay, let's go ahead and take a break there. Dr. DiPaolo, he is running for Congress in Oregon's 5th District. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And we're back in our final segment now on iSpy Radio. We've had three guests today. That's probably a first for us. Our final guest here is Dr. John DiPaolo. He is a recently retired orthopedic surgeon, and he is now running for Congress in Oregon CD5. And so, John, I had mentioned previously with Mark Thielman in his segments that just this week, the GAO, the General Counting Office, issued a report that found the CDC, the NIH, and FDA all lied about COVID for political purposes. So the CDC lied about data. The state used that data to lie about data. They used the falsified data to push their politics. Would you care to comment on this development?
Well, I think it was inevitable that this information would be uncovered because it is so obvious when looking back. And it's, of course, it's gotten a lot of publicity and analysis. That the process that was followed in the development of the COVID therapeutics was flawed in many ways and misrepresented. And I'm not surprised at all about the findings. It would appear that people knew something was wrong. They just didn't have a procedure to be able to file a complaint, and or they were concerned about retribution for speaking out.
Well, so what would you do as congressman to hold these people accountable? Because this politicization of a pandemic, it likely overturned an election and got rid of a sitting president. People lost their jobs. People's lives were destroyed. Businesses were destroyed. It destroyed the economy. People weren't allowed to visit loved ones when they were in the hospital or when they were in nursing homes. People died lonely and afraid. I mean, this had huge ramifications. It's not just somebody out there tweaking some numbers. It really had real-world impacts. So what would you do to hold these people accountable? What kind of punishment should they be facing?
Well, I think there has to be a full-scale investigation, and all of the players need to testify. It's going to play out kind of like a Nuremberg trial because some of these things that were done or not done by the individuals in charge resulted in excess numbers of death. They resulted in young children having their development retarded or slowed. It has caused people to become depressed and use more drugs. People have had more heart attacks. There's been more non-COVID deaths since the vaccines have come out. So the whole thing needs to be taken apart, and those who are responsible for any misrepresentation have to be held accountable. And I think the law would designate the appropriate punishment. But I think the solution is that we have to separate science from government and industry.
Yes.
There is a industrial medical government complex that has been operative for many, many years. They have produced a lot of controversy in the scientific community. So what we have to do is develop a method where all funding for development of new medicines and devices should come from industry, not the taxpayers. We should not be paying to have vaccines, or they're not really vaccines. They perform more like a gene therapy. The public, the taxpayer should not, have to foot the bill for these experimental drugs. And the second thing is that there have to be two separate independent scientific panels of individuals with no conflicts of interest. And one panel should test any medications or devices produced by the medical industrial complex for safety and effectiveness to confirm any studies that the industry provides to support their use in the public. And the second panel should be assigned to approve these devices for public use. And this would apply to not only new devices and medicines, but also for the off-label uses of existing medications. So I think you can't have government and industry in charge of science. There's just too much conflict, and the people's welfare gets lost in the mix.
And I absolutely agree with you. On the private side of things, because, as I said, you had people lose jobs, you had people impacted there in your own practice, you had people that had to put off these surgeries and just live with the pain, which is just a horrible thought that some politician would be pushing that. Do you see lawsuits happening on the private side? And should they be able to sue people that were pushing these falsified data?
Well, I think under any other circumstances, people would have recourse. If they have been injured by any medical intervention. But with the emergency use authorization, That is a murky area. I'm not certain of how the legal system would be able to offer them justice. I hope they can, and I think they should. And under normal circumstances, many of these things never would have happened. The emergency use authorization was like a cloak that covered everything and prevented us seeing what was going on, and it also prevented us from intervening in what was going on.
Oh, exactly right. So we've only got about 45 seconds here with you. What is something about your campaign that most people may not know but really ought to? You know, perhaps an issue that you're strong on that just doesn't get enough attention?
Well, I think the educational issues with children, you know, it's not in the top five concerns. You know, people are concerned about homelessness and crime and drugs and things like that. But, you know, the kids have been so damaged by all of these issues. We have young children that have inadvertently taken fentanyl and have died or been injured.
Yes.
We have young children that are being forced to face sexual and gender issues that they shouldn't have to, that they should be able to live an innocent childhood and be guided by their parents.
Yeah, and I just think that's going to do an awful lot of damage going forward. Unfortunately, we're up against the clock.
Yeah.
John, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Anytime.
For more information, John's website is dipaolaforcongress.com. That's D-I-P-A-O-L-A. Four is spelled out, F-O-R, dipaolaforcongress.com. And to make that easier, we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. While you're there, be sure to check out a poll by OPB on voter sentiment here in Oregon. This is a devastating poll for Democrats and a great poll, not only for Republicans in general, but especially so for outsider candidates like our three guests today. Go take a look at that poll and you'll see exactly what I mean. Voters this year are done with elected politicians. They want new blood and candidates who are strong on issues like education, law and order, and other issues that appeal to most voters. Those kind of candidates are going to be truly our best choice to run in November. We will also have some information about that devastating GAO report that found the FDA, NIH, and CDC all lied about COVID for political purposes. This is a developing story, but we are already planning to have Jonathan Emord, one of America's top constitutional attorneys, back on to talk about this. All that and more at iSpy Radio. That's the letter I, iSpyRadio.com. Check that out. Share it. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.